Going to get into an interview that I did with Tom Uhlner, pianist in town. I'm sure many of you know, and we've had him featuring different musicians for the past couple of months. And Bill Kleewitz, who is a longtime friend of mine, longtime friend of Tom's, but a very interesting person who has been around the world of jazz for over 50 years. Let's get right to it. We're going to talk with Bill about old time Chicago, how he got into photography, how he became a great guitar player, and everything else in between here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. We are here once again. It is time for a Tommy's Showcase. Tom Uhlner, a piano player that I'm sure many of our listeners know. I know you have probably seen him perform at either the Jazz Showcase, the Green Mill, Katerina's, or many other locations. He also runs one of the hottest jam sessions in Chicago, Monday nights at the Serbian Village on Irving Park Road from 9 p.m. until 1 a.m. You can catch Tommy and the house band with Phil Gratteau and many other musicians sitting in and performing. And I thought, you know, when we were doing the shows back at Katerina's in the fall, we came up with this idea to showcase different musicians. And I thought, who better would be able to do that than Tom Uhlner, who performs pretty much every night of the week and also has a jam session. So as musicians come in and out of town, a lot of times as a, you know, running the magazine and performing myself, I miss them. I don't get to see them until they're a little bit more established on the scene or until they're leaving town because they've gotten so established that it's time for them to move on. So Tom and I thought about it and said, hey, what better way to do this than maybe Tom could make some suggestions, bring him in, and Tom and I could interview the musicians.
Right.
And tonight, we're going to put a little bit different twist on this because Tom and I both know.
Just a spin.
Just a spin. The old switcheroony, as they say in the, what tune is that? Satin Doll. The old switcheroony.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And
a lot of people don't include that in the quote when they play the song. Da-ba-do-da.
They have to, right? That's part of the deal.
Not everyone does it. Gets me mad when they don't.
That's a whole other show.
We
could do 20 minutes on the switcheroony. So we're going to do a little switcheroony here on the show because both Tom and I know Bill Kleewitz very well. We've got the guitarist, bassist sometimes, and well-known photographer on the Chicago jazz scene, Bill Kleewitz, here in the studio tonight. He's a longtime friend of Tom Uhlner's, longtime friend of mine. He's been shooting for the Chicago Jazz Magazine for 13 years since I started the magazine. Remember that? Remember the first issue we did? Bill Kleewitz used to have a full page of back photos. We had shots of Dizzy Gillespie. I think we even have one of Herbie Hancock in the bathroom over at the Jazz Showcase.
Right, holding a T-shirt.
Besides being a great photographer, Bill and I have played together many times. Tom and Bill have played together many times.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about Bill's background in music, how he got started with photography. But first, I want to introduce Tom Uhlner. How are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
That's good.
As Bill Walton would say, once said, if I was doing any better, it would be illegal. So that's how great I am.
That's
so
good.
And Bill Kleewitz, how are you?
Everything is copacetic today.
All right.
And thanks for the invite, and good to see you guys.
I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you were on the first radio show I used to have on another station, and you're a YouTube sensation. We were talking about that off the air, so if anybody wants to take a look at Bill Kleewitz, they can check out his YouTube interview on Chicago Jazz Music YouTube channel. But I digress. So, Tom, what I want to find out, because I know when I first met Bill, but when did you first meet Bill Kleewitz?
I would say officially in the early 90s, but I had seen Bill around for years because he'd always be shooting photographs at the Jazz Showcase and the Green Mill or anywhere where there was great jazz, and he's world-renowned for his photography skills, and he's a great musician too. A lot of people don't know that.
Right. Well, you know, and Bill, I guess my question to you is, when did you start? I guess what came first? You know, the photography or the performance, the playing?
Probably photography, because when I was a kid, My father had an old Kodak Brownie box camera. It took 620 film. He was always taking pictures with it. And so I wanted to be like Pop, so I take the camera out to the local, the farmer's market on Elston Avenue where I grew up, and they had big pickle barrels in there, and they had these old ladies, they'd put their hand in the barrel and pull out a pickle, and I'd be scrunched down on the floor getting a shot of them. They'd holler at me and shake their fist, you know, but those were some of the first photos that I took. I don't know why I felt the urge to take candid shots like that of people, but I had always loved music. My father had a pot-bellied mandolin, and he'd strum the mandolin around the house, and he'd put on a Mexican sombrero, even though he's born in Germany. He spent 4 years in Buenos Aires, so he brought back this mandolin, and he had a violin that was even worse sounding than Jack Benny's. But he'd make me laugh. And
this
my mother
explains
would,
a lot.
My yeah, mother, it's all coming out now.
My mother would sing like an opera singer, you know, and I would. And my cousin Lanny really turned me on to jazz when I was, you know, listening to more of it around 11, 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He was 5 years older than myself, and he was already playing bebop stuff in Arlington Heights High School. So I used to hear all of his records. I listened to Daddy O'Daly, Daddy's Jazz Patio on the radio,
yeah.
Great, one of the great Chicago jazz DJs for many years, Sid McCoy, and the list goes on, Marty Fay, Mike Rapchak.
Right.
So this all influenced me. Oh, I heard the music. I didn't know what it was, but I liked it. I knew I liked it, and I started I got my first guitar when I was about 13 years old, and I always listened to Les Paul and Mary Ford on the TV, and they had a 15-minute spot. I listened to them. I loved the way he played. I had all of his 78 records.
Yeah.
And all of the music that was popular in the 50s, Bill Doggett, I loved him. He had a big hit called Honky Tonk. And Billy Butler was a guitar player who was a big influence on me. He was a wonderful, real tasteful, soulful player. So that's when I started playing guitar.
And Bill plays left-handed guitar.
Wow.
And actually, we both have that in common. We're left-handed,
yeah.
As was Thelonious Monk and Errol Garner and Bill Evans, just in case anyone wanted to know. But I actually have a band called the Left-Hand Band, you know, because one night by accident, by happenstance, we were all playing this gig, and we got a meal, and we all lift up our forks with our left hand, so we're like, oh, I guess everyone in the band was left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
I think Spider Saloff and Eric Schneider, and it's
don't forget Rusty Jones.
Yeah, yeah,
that's right. I don't play drums left-handed like Rusty, but I play hockey left-handed. Does that count? Can I?
Yeah, yeah. You're part of the.
Oh, good.
The
right.
Click.
So I made it. I mean, my grandma bought me a hockey stick when I was younger, and she didn't know if it was right or left, and I didn't know either. I just started using it, and later on I found out I played hockey left-handed now.
Yeah.
I think I trained myself that way.
Well.
Well, anyway, see, I digress.
We're digressing, right. but no, it's an interesting phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
They say that you're in your right mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble even talking today.
Well, so you did that. I mean, you started playing music, and did you study with somebody, or did you just pick it up?
No, I played by ear. I picked it up basically by ear. I bought a book, though, and I think a lot of the guitar players will relate to this. I bought a book called Mickey Baker, Book One. And he was a real fine guitar player. He played studio gigs. He was a good player, but he had was more noted for a big hit with Mickey and Sylvia, Love mm-hmm. is Strange. Wonderful guitar player. But when I saw this book, and I saw the fingerboard charts for the certain chords, like the 13th chord, then it made sense to me because I couldn't read, and I was
I was
ignorant on the the ways of musical technology. But that book really helped me, and listening to a lot of musicians. And when I was 16, I played my first professional gig. And then by the time I was 17, I was getting into clubs underage where they would let me in. They knew that I was a teenager, but I'd try to look older, more mature, with a tweed coat and a little mustache. And I got to hear Count Basie's band at the Club Laurel at 17,
wow.
And
yeah.
Joe Williams and
yeah.
With the Junior Mass Trio at the Le Bistro, things like that. In fact, I used to go down to Rush Street quite a bit and see where I could get in. The Pagal was a little place off of Rush in Delaware where I first heard Larry Novak.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, with Cleveland Eaton, sometimes John Whitfield. So
wow.
I got to hear quite a bit of jazz when I was 17.
Well, and you were around, I mean, when Rush Street was happening.
It was popping back
I mean,
then.
It was popping. Oh. What was that like? Was it one club after another?
Every club had live music and all good players.
I mean, I don't even think people can relate to it now, but let's just take it from, like, where Ontario is north, right? Is that pretty much? And it was just, like, one club after another straight up. I mean, now there's parking garages, hotels, and everything else, but none of that was there. It was all just clubs, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a lot of clubs. And there was a lot of work, as all you guys know, back in the old days. Even 20 years ago, there was a lot more work than there is now. But back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, there was tons of work, even 80s, as far as jobbing dates go.
Sure.
But there were more gigs in everything, jazz gigs. Gigs, bow tie gigs, I call them.
Right.
To make money.
We've made great strides in reverse.
That's right. It was exciting. Those are the days of Mr. Kelly's, which is, in fact, Tommy is playing at the same location where Kelly's was.
That's
on
true.
Rush Street.
Yeah.
It's called Gibson's now.
Yeah, Gibson's.
I heard a lot.
It's got a nice vibe over there, too. Yeah. I mean,
is that the same building?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it is? They just gutted it?
It's the same building.
Yeah, and I keep thinking that when I'm playing there of all the legends that actually played there.
Yeah.
It's obviously not set up to say, so they must have gutted it out, right? Or is
I'm not sure. Yeah, well, obviously they've...
Probably.
It was.
Yeah.
I think it was Sweetwater for a while now.
Okay.
It's been Gibson's for a long time.
All of that stuff, like the London House over on Wacker, right?
Right.
And, I mean, that's
it's a Burger King now, I think.
The Burger King or 7-Eleven or something like that. It's right there, you know.
Oh.
But that's one of those things, and that's why I was asking, is because you were there. And did you take photos back then? Did you take – I mean, because, you know, when things are happening, you don't really think about, oh, I'll take outside shots of these places. But did you ever do any of that?
Well, I did take some photos in the London House and a few other places, but to tell you the truth, at that stage of my life, I didn't think of myself as a photographer, and I still don't, really. I feel like I'm a musician with a camera. I've been really lucky and fortunate.
Like Milt Hinton.
Well, yeah, Milt Hinton, he always had his camera. He had a Rolleiflex medium format camera with 120 film, and he took great, amazing photos in buses. One he took a dizzy asleep on a Cab Calloway gig. I mean, little things that you just can't, you have to be
duplicate.
There.
You can't duplicate. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of great photographers in Chicago, and they're great, but they're not musicians. And a lot of times, being a musician, you find yourself in places at 3 or 4 or 5 in the morning that these other guys are asleep, and there you are.
Right.
And you can get some really crazy pictures that are kind of interesting,
right,
to say the least, some of which I couldn't show anyone either. But anyway, I have some photos of in the London House and some other clubs, especially the apartment lounge on East 75th. I used to love to go there.
Mm-hmm.
After I got out of the military, I was going there, late 60s. I saw everybody in there. There was Paul Quinichet and Arthur Prysock, great singer. You know, Jack McDuff. Everybody, Houston Person, Etta Jones. I mean, and of course, that's the very first place where I saw Don Patterson. Well, I shouldn't say that. I actually saw him with Sonny Stitt at the Plug Nickel, with the great drummer Billy James. But
you worked with Don Patterson and Billy James.
I had the honor. I'm very fortunate, very lucky. It was a bright spot in my life that I got to meet them, become good friends with them, and he was just the most incredible organist. He was such a swinging organ player, and he played with such incredible technique, almost like piano chops on the organ. But he had a way of playing that was different than other kids. And anybody that's an organ player in Chicago, and they know about Don and how great he was. And he was a wonderful guy. He and Billy were just great to me. We were on the road together for a minute and did some gigs. Rehearsed all summer in 1970 for an LP that never happened. That would have been with Sonny Seals.
Oh, wow.
And Al Gray.
I played with Sonny Seals.
And it didn't work out. There's some other problems. But, financial things or whatever. But you
got to play with Don Patterson then on a regular basis for a while.
It was a great experience. And
you worked with Charlie Rouse, too.
Charlie Rouse, we did a gig at the apartment, and Charlie played a whole weekend together with him, which was great. And he was another, you know, one of my idols,
yeah,
legend in jazz. And I was just lucky to be a part of that.
Yeah.
And he really knew how to play Thelonious with Thelonious Monk, you know.
And he knew how to play the right bridge on while you needn't.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you also recorded. You recorded with a Chicago vocalist, right? So, speaking of Sonny's and everything else, Sonny G.
Oh, yes.
I'm trying to bring it back so we can play a tune so everybody can hear your guitar your guitar playing here. What tune should we hear, Tom?
Day in the Life of a Fool, because I think Bill does a beautiful solo on that.
Here's a track by the artist Sonny G, and featuring Bill Kliwitz on guitar. And we'll be back here with a little bit more on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. All right, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. I'm Mike Jeffers, publisher of Chicago Jazz Magazine. I'm here with Tom Uhlner and Bill Kliwitz. This is Tommy's Showcase. Now, Tom, we just heard a track off of Sonny G, who's a vocalist in town. Sonny G's recording. And what's the name of the recording?
The name of the recording is I'll Be Laughing Tonight.
And the name of the track?
A Day in the Life of a Fool.
There you go. Day in the Life of the Fool. And that featured Bill Kliwitz on guitar. Now, how many people, Bill, do you think know that you can play guitar like that when they see you taking these incredible photos? Some of them, by the way, are featured down at the Jazz Showcase. You can go down, look at the walls of the Jazz Showcase, and you can see some of Bill's. Of course, you can check Chicago Jazz Magazine. We've got... You've done photo, the last issue, actually, the Jan-Feb issue that we had Ira Sullivan on. That was your photo on the cover. But, yeah, I mean, you've been nice enough to contribute throughout the entire years of the magazine, really helping me out and enabling us to get photos of a lot of these musicians that they don't have their own press photos. So it's one of those things that you're going around, you're taking shots, but you're really doing a huge favor to everyone on the jazz scene.
He's done all my photos, actually. He's the man. He's got the eye. And one thing is he captures the moment beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it where it's not a distraction. Like when he's in a club and there's some saxophone player or something playing some beautiful ballad, you know, Bill knows how to shoot without the flash and all of that kind of stuff. And really captures the moment. He's got just a magic
eye.
And
you use real film.
That's right.
And that's something, I mean, you and I have talked. I mean, you probably have, 1,000 rolls of film undeveloped? Maybe up in the storage
maybe
area?
Maybe 300 right now, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the history that you've got, but it just costs so much money to get that developed. It's incredible.
It takes me time, and as time goes on, every minute, there's less and less venues for me to go to get good quality processing.
Right.
A lot of people are folding left and right.
Photo stores.
Calumet Photo, after 70 years, just closed on March 12th.
Right.
Helix Photo closed 6 months ago. A lot of people are
Everything's digital now.
Everything's digital, and that's fine as its place, but I believe in film.
Mm-hmm.
I like to hold a negative in my hand. I like to... You know, hold a piece of a pizza in my hand. I don't want a reality pizza. I want real pizza.
Right.
And that's how I feel about it. I like to smell the smell of the paper from the processing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's what I've done my whole life. So, and I'm not a businessman, so I don't feel a need to change. That I need instant gratification, an instant photo that I can see on the back of the camera.
Right.
I do admit that it's a lot cheaper to be a digital photographer. But I haven't gone there yet, and chances are I won't. I just don't have the desire to do that.
But you've got
as long
some
as I can get by this way.
You know. You've got some incredible shots too. And you and I were talking years ago about how you used to go to the Plug Nickel, and
I sure did.
You took lots of shots at the Plug Nickel. I think
I
didn't
did.
You?
Yeah.
But you were at the Plug Nickel sessions when Miles Davis was performing, but you didn't have your camera that night.
Well, that was, when I think back on that, I could kick myself because I really didn't have a good quality camera at the time. I was on military leave. I had just gotten back from my first tour in Southeast Asia, and I was at home. I was glad to be in Chicago, and I heard Miles was in town. Me and my buddy Dave, we went over to the Plug Nickel. I had no camera. I can remember the date. It was December 23rd, 1965, and there I was right in the front of the band. What an incredible band. There I was, Miles and Wayne Shorter and Herbie and Tony and Ron Carter. I mean, it was just so incredible. The music was so fantastic. And I know I'd spoken about this on another radio interview, but I don't know if I should even say it, but Miles is a little temperamental sometimes, and somebody made some loud noises in the crowd, and it bugged Miles, and he stopped playing for a bit. You know, and then some people were walking out.
He just stopped, like the band kept playing, or no?
No,
just,
he stopped. The band stopped, and then...
they just took a break? That was it?
Yeah, and then he came back a little later and resumed playing. You know. I didn't care. I just sat there waiting for more great music.
And, yeah, right.
So this is 1965. If I would have had a good camera and gotten some nice shots
of him looking
who knows what they would have looked like.
He would have looked angry. Yeah. He probably would have been looking at Bill, why are you taking my picture? And that could have been a whole other story.
Well, that's happened before with a lot of other musicians. So
has it?
They pointed their fingers at me, and I won't mention any names, some famous people, and they said, what are you going to do with that picture? And I said, well, I don't know.
And then I'm going to make millions.
One gentleman, a famous drummer, he said, well, I just got off a plane in Paris recently, and there was a guy that handed me a giant stack of postcards with my picture on it that he was selling, and he gave me a bunch of the postcards. And I said, well, that's something I would never even think of.
Yeah,
I
mean, right. But thanks for the idea.
I've given more pictures away. I don't really even sell pictures. I'm not I wouldn't do that. But anyway, that's the kind of thing that happens. People, they don't know me, that I'm actually a musician. It's, I don't know if you want to call it a hobby. It's an obsession. It's just an offshoot of the jazz music. To me, jazz is my whole life. Jazz musicians, jazz photographs, jazz movies, and hanging out late. I love to hang out. Hang out till the sun comes up. I don't know how many times I've hung out with different musicians, including Ira, and all of us till 5, 6 in the morning, and he's raring to go. He says at 6 in the morning, now I'm warmed up. Now I'm ready to go. Anybody that knows Ira knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we've done a few of those hangs.
We've done some of those.
Yeah.
So to me, jazz is, it's a way of life. It's a way of thinking, you know, not going down the same street every time, try a different street.
How about the night we hung out with Frank West?
Well, Frank West and Teddy Edwards.
Teddy Edwards. They're both gone.
A lot of fun. Yeah, both the two of the greatest jazz artists of all time, the legends of jazz.
Well, you mentioned Ira Sullivan, who many of our listeners are going to know, obviously. I mean, they probably know everybody you're talking about. But Ira Sullivan, you and Ira have a special bond. You're really close with Ira.
I am.
I mean, you've taken tons of pictures of him. You've played with him a little bit here and there.
We had a few gigs.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And,
we
I mean, how
jammed
did,
a lot.
Did you know him since he was young? I mean, he grew up in town here, so...
No, I knew about him, but I actually didn't meet him and hear him play live until Joe Siegel got him to the Jazz Showcase on Rush Street around 1976. And he brought somebody that I had heard years ago, a great guitarist, Joe DiOrio, who's we're still in touch every month we talk. He's been a dear friend for a long time. And when I heard these guys live, and Eddie Higgins was a piano player, Danny Shapiro, the great... the Tank, we call him, and Wilbur, the chief, on drums. I'm telling you, what a band.
Wilbur Campbell.
What incredible music. So from that time on, we became good friends, and I started photographing him then. Sometimes I'd use a little, sometimes color, but mostly black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So since that time, we've been friends.
Yeah, and we've jammed together, the three of us. And
at your house? Even.
At my house, yeah.
I mean, he's just... Ira is I call him the world's greatest jazz musician, and he probably would get mad if he heard me say that. But it's hard to dispute that because he's such a brilliant musician, and he has been for a long time. But he's not only that; he's a great human being. He's somebody that inspires everyone he talks to.
A great teacher.
We've stopped homeless people on the street when we were out late at night, would beg for help, and Ira, instead of, like a lot of people would be maybe paranoid or they'd shun them, he would embrace them.
Mm-hmm.
Once we just got done at a restaurant, and this guy came up to us. And Tommy was there, and he says, well, I haven't eaten in weeks. He says, oh, he says, are you lucky? I've got this half a sandwich here.
Yeah.
And the guy says, oh, food. I don't know if he wanted food or not. But,
well, you know the old story.
By the time these guys got it.
That Zoot Sims, was it Zoot Sims or Al Cohn? I think.
Al Cohn.
Yeah, the guy comes up and says, hey, man, can I get a dollar? and he hands him the dollar. He says, I hope you're not going to go and buy food with this.
Right. That was in the Bill Crow book, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I first really started playing with you, it was with Mark Pompey at a casino boat
East
Chicago, Indiana.
Right.
And he used to call you Wizzo.
Wizzo, yeah. That's right.
And
that's a good one, too.
That was a wild gig,
well,
huh?
That was a wild gig, all right. I'll never forget
that
it.
That was a wild gig. We would, at the end of the set, we were on like this, like a gazebo inside.
Yeah.
And at the end of the set, it doesn't matter what was happening. I think we had Ron DeWar one time playing this beautiful solo, or Mark Pompey singing, or whatever.
Right.
The siren would go off. It would start going beep, 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 and it would lower us down into the floor, no matter if we were in the middle of something or
didn't
whatever.
Matter.
And that was it.
It was all on a timer.
Right.
And it was a circular stage, and it was like a cylinder, a tube, and we would go down into the depths of the basement. You know, no matter what was being played, no one really listened to us anyway.
Right. It was insane. But it was like for 5 hours on a Sunday.
I know. And I recommended Mike for the gig because Mark had asked me, well, who can we get on drums? And I said, I know a young fellow. He's new on the scene. He's a great drummer, and he's reliable. You know, he'll show up, and we did the gig. So we did quite a few gigs there. One with Warren Keim,
He came
down a bunch
of times.
He was a wonderful player, wonderful trumpet, flugelhorn player. And
I got to work with him.
Ron DeWar and, you know, different people. But it was an experience. It was just the gig just went up and down, basically.
Well, and you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, photography and a lot about guitar playing and your history and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to at least touch on a couple of Chicago musicians and guitar players specifically. But Freddie Rundquist, I remember I met Freddie a couple of times through you, but you were great friends with Freddie Rundquist, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners is going to remember who Freddie Rundquist is.
Right.
Why don't you give a little background on Freddie and how you met him?
Well, I felt like he was my best friend. He passed away in 2009 at age 91.
Wow, yeah.
And he was in reasonably good health and looked much younger than he was. By the time he was 86 years old, he was still playing, and he was afflicted with a neurological disease that changed his life, and he had to take prednisone and all kinds of things to keep his fingers working and his jaw and his tongue working and this type of thing. Anyway, Freddie was a great guitar player, and he was a very modest guy. He never bragged, and he never talked about all of the gigs and recordings that he did in his lifetime, which spanned a number of years. But I had heard about him, and he was known by most people as the guitarist with the Art Van Dam Quintet, a jazz accordionist.
Mm-hmm.
They made a number of recordings in the 50s and 60s and even 70s. But Freddie worked with a lot of other people. It took an entire lifetime for me to find out who he played with, because he would never talk about it.
Real humble. A lot of those guys were real humble.
You know, he worked with Ira in the 50s. He worked with Johnny Pate at the Sutherland years ago.
Judy Garland too, right?
He worked with Judy Garland.
She
had him take a bow at the Civic Opera House and say, "That's a great guitar player." I mean, that's a wonderful thing. But there's a lot of other people, and I've written about him. I wrote his obit for the Union paper, and it was published a few times. There were so many people. He was a very tasteful guitar player. He could play piano voicings on the guitar. He could follow anybody. And he was a great accompanist for singers. Because like Tommy said, he worked and recorded with Jerry Southern and Helen Merrill. He's on an album with Helen Merrill.
Oh, really?
Merrill.
That's right.
Wow.
And he's played with a lot of... He was on the road with country singer Eddie Arnold, and he and another guitar player, Hank Garland, were the guitar players. A great guitar player.
Yeah.
And everybody that would come to Chicago, he was so highly respected. He never had an LP on his own name, but he was a sideman on a number of records. Every time Barney Kessel or Johnny Smith, he was very close with Johnny Smith, Howard Roberts or Herb Ellis, Joe Pass, they would always, or Tal Farlow, they all loved him and knew him very well, and they would always call him and come right over to his house for Swedish coffee cake. And
really?
If it was around Christmas, he'd have his homemade Swedish glug.
Yeah.
And we would jam there. Luckily, I was friends with Freddie, and I'd met some of the people years ago, but because of Freddie, I got to meet John Collins, who was a great guitar player with Nat Cole, and I photographed all of these people, so I have photos of all of these guitar players, got to meet them. I saw some of them on the West Coast, like Howard Roberts and Barney. I saw them years ago. Mm-hmm. And Freddie was just a wonderful guy. I really miss him a lot. And he was just a real tasteful. So he caressed that guitar, you know.
Yeah.
I played some gigs with him. And
did you?
Okay. When you're a pianist and you're playing with a guitar player, you both have to really do a lot of listening. I didn't even have to try with Freddie. He just was, he knew how to stay in the weeds when it was time and all that. And we just, the mutual respect, well, he was a respectful guy. And I'm so glad I had the opportunity to play a few gigs with him. You know, I didn't play with him maybe more than four or five times, I think.
Right.
But I'm really glad I had that opportunity.
Well, and another guitar player, world-famous guitar player, just in town, Pat Martino.
Yeah.
And you're close with Pat. Both of you are. But, you, Bill, I know you're real close with Pat Martino.
Well, I met Pat through Bill. So.
Yeah, I've met Pat through Bill, too. And, I mean, that relationship, just a guitar player. I mean, you're driving him around. You're taking him out. Yeah, because we ran into each other over Andy's. I think it was last year that right. when he was in town, you brought him over to see Henry Johnson. How did you develop? Was that a relationship? You met him like years ago, or?
Well, when I first met Don Patterson, he asked me. He said, "Do you know Pat Martino?" I said, "Well, I haven't met him yet." You know, he says, "Well, you will. You're going to meet Pat Martino," because he had already made some fantastic recordings with Don and Billy James.
What year would you say this was, or what?
Well, Pat recorded with Don back in 1968, even.
Okay,
66,
so way back, yeah, way right. back.
And Pat's first recordings were in the mid '60s when he was only maybe 20 or 21 years old.
Yeah,
and he was always. Just a marvelous, super swinging and melodic guitar player with that certain kind of that soul, Philly soul, if you want to call mm-hmm. it that.
And we just saw him last Sunday night, and, I mean, you know, he just blows me away every time.
He's one of the greats. There's nobody like Pat. He's a unique guitar player, and I always would call him Sonny Stitt on guitar because he digs in, he plays, he's got... You know, a real tight. He's got heavy action, heavy strings, and he doesn't mess around. He doesn't have any slinky strings or.
Right.
He doesn't have a guitar that's real easy to play like a lot of guys, and he gets this incredibly fat tone that he's developed over the years. And he has had an amazing life at an early age. He was hanging with all these amazing musicians in Philadelphia.
John Coltrane.
Sitting on the steps with Coltrane.
Yeah, yeah. On his front porch.
I mean, that kind of
jamming thing. With an acoustic guitar.
That's something you can't
Coltrane.
Buy. You can't buy in a college course.
No. Know.
Pat was there. He's been a gifted player ever since he was very, very young. Les Paul wrote the liner notes for his first album.
Oh, wow, really?
That's, yeah. And in fact, when Pat's father brought young Pat to see Les Paul for the first time when he was only maybe 13 or 14 years old, something like that, it may be a little off. He was so impressed with his playing. He was just, like, blown away. I think he mentioned that the way he holds his pick, like someone holds a teacup, because he plays sort of mm-hmm. like this.
Oh, yes, I noticed that.
And he has a way of picking.
You know, the one thing that I notice about Pat, and I've seen him a bunch of times, I think some of the best shows I saw was when it was Pat's trio, but it was Joey and Byron Landon were playing with
right.
him.
Right.
And he just walks in, and it's just, he doesn't say a word. And just starts playing, and it's like one tune after another is getting more and more swing. He doesn't mess around. There's no messing around.
No.
It's like
no.
it's on. And
yeah.
this last time he was just in town, it's the same thing. I mean, he's got a smoking band. He just comes out. I think he's said hi to everybody about five tunes into it, and it's like one of those things that you don't see all the time because there aren't really anybody that comes. They come out, and he's just playing standards. He's burning them, man. And they are grooving, and it's like groove central.
Yeah.
And it's like, get out of the way. It's incredible seeing that.
He's the cat. To me, for my personal taste, he's the heaviest guitar player on the planet Earth.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
And he doesn't have all of those pedals on the floor,
right.
all those crutches and those funny sound effects. He's got an amp and a guitar, plays his butt off. And another thing, one of the things that I'm very appreciative of, Nobody can play a ballad like Pat.
Oh,
a
yeah.
lot of guys can play real fast, and they're but you know, to play a real slow ballad like this with this incredible sound, he sounds like you know, a great sax player like Gene Ammons playing a ballad only on guitar.
Right.
With that incredible
expressive,
grease,
yeah.
that soulful feeling. I mean, he's just one of the most amazing players, and his ideas are so amazing.
And he's a sweetheart too. He's a
wonderful guy. He's a dear.
We've hung out with him some late hours at times, and it was a wonderful experience.
And that's part of the camaraderie thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
there actually was more of that years ago. A lot of times, people just haven't got time with their busy schedules and stuff.
Right.
I'm being a little sarcastic.
Like me.
No, you're doing what you're doing.
I can't hang out until 4 o'clock in the morning anymore. Although I remember, I think you took the picture when I remember being at Andy's one night. I mean, this was when I was sitting in every night of the week. Mm-hmm. This is before I even started the magazine.
I remember
mid-90s, and Monday nights it wasn't a jam session yet at Andy's, but Bainey would let me sit in because Charlie Brom and John and Dave, they were playing, but then they would also do the Chuck Hedges set before. So when I'd walk in, Charlie would just bring me up, and I'd play for like an hour. And I mm-hmm. think I followed Bainey over. We went to the Golden Dragon.
Right.
Oh,
In Old Town.
We used to hang out there a lot.
That was our main place.
Amma Jamal was in there.
Yeah, right.
And Roy Haynes came in.
Sure. I brought Roy Haynes there once.
Okay. And there's a picture. I remember you showing me a picture at one point. Huh. I'm not in it. I think I was standing back because I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Right.
It's like Amma Jamal, Roy Haynes, all these cats like at the Golden Dragon mm-hmm. at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
those days.
Deems used to come there all Barrett the time.
Barrett Deems, yeah.
Frank Durone, too.
Frank.
Well, the guy that owned it, his name was Terry Yum. He was a really cool cat.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew what was going on, and he was like very.
Remember that thing he used to do with his fingers?
Musicians.
He did a thing with his fingers or something. Mm-hmm. He would make a noise.
Yeah.
He did this. He was into karate and.
He was a martial arts expert.
Martial
arts. And he, you know, when it came time for closing, I mean, that place is gone. He had passed away, unfortunately. He opened up his doors to the musicians. By the time it was closing time, the doors were locked, but we'd stay inside.
Yeah.
Right.
And then we'd party.
It's like the Bucket of Suds.
We would hang out like the Bucket of Suds that Tommy was famous for on Cicero near Belmont. Famous place for jazz musicians to hang out late at night.
Yeah. Well, now, I mean, nowadays, even when I started hanging out and doing all that, it was like the mid-90s. It was like the Chambers. I mean, I remember being in the Chambers till 5 o'clock in the morning because that's when Gary, right?
Yeah.
Gary owned the place. He'd lock the doors. We'd all hang. The jam session on a Thursday night would move
into
Friday.
I got him his piano there, that Yamaha C3.
And I'd get stuck in rush hour traffic on the way home through Park Ridge going back over to Des Plaines. I mean, but now I don't know if that kind of hanging is actually.
I don't do that as much as I used to. It's just I'm getting too old, maybe.
Well, and I also think that
you're
like,
under 100.
Yeah,
there aren't those places to do that anymore. It doesn't. The vibe's not
That's
there
true.
To do it.
Yeah.
You know,
where can you go?
I mean, really, you know. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, the Green Mill's open late.
Right.
But
yeah.
Other than that,
and that Serbian Village thing we do on Mondays, you know, that goes till 1 on a Monday night. You know,
or later.
Or late, yeah, sometimes.
I've seen it later when things are happening.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
Well.
That's a great set.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, what, you know, speaking of the Serbian Village, Tom, what's the address? Because we want to make sure everybody, and I'm sure if you don't see Bill out in the town, you'd be able to talk to him over at the Serbian Village when he is in town because
yes.
he travels a lot.
He does.
But when he is in town, where can everybody see you?
Well, I'm there on Mondays, 3144 West Irving. It's right across the street from a Walgreens. And Rudy, the proprietor, is a sweet guy. He loves the musicians, you know, and it seems to be a great success. I mean, the place is just mobbed.
Yeah.
Usually.
It is, yeah.
And you never know who's going to be there. Like last week, there was a guy from L.A. There was a couple guys from Atlanta. And then not to mention some great Chicago musicians come in. Dan Trudell comes in every now and then. And
Pat Mallinger. Yeah, a lot of people.
And we have a ball. We really do.
Yeah.
And Dan usually brings a melodica, and we do like a duet and, you know.
So they can visit you over there every Monday night.
Yep.
Serbian Village. And why don't we go out with a track off of the Live at Yoshi's CD, speaking of Pat Martino, and, of course, another friend of both of yours, Joey DeFrancesco, who we didn't even get to talk about.
Right. That's a whole other show, but we've had some wonderful times with
Joey. Maybe we'll have Joey come in here sometime, and the four of us will do a show, and we'll talk all about Tom Muehlner.
We'll have to talk about we take Joey D to the Golden Dragon, and he'd have the Hong Kong steak, which was humongous, the biggest thing I ever saw in my life. And
I remember him. He came over to Weeds.
All right.
You brought him over to Weeds one night when Baney used to play over there, all of a sudden Joey walks in and was like, what are you doing here?
Gotta go where the sounds are.
That's right. Well, why don't we go out? Bill, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much,
Mike.
And thanks, Tommy.
I think we got more insight.
Great to have you.
When people see you out on the town, they're going to know, hey, that's Bill Kliewicz. I want to talk to him about everything I just heard on the radio.
And, Bill, I'm glad you met me. It was your pleasure.
You're too kind, Tommy.
Well, why don't we go out with Live at Yoshi's. It's Billy Hart on drums, Joey DeFrancesco on, of course, B3 organ, and Pat Martino. This track is called Olio. And thanks again, Tom. I think this was a great,
my pleasure. Thank
great
you.
Choice. And we will see you back here again for your next Tommy's Showcase to be announced. But in the meantime, thanks for listening to Chicago Jazz Revealed. And let's take a listen to Pat Martino, Olio, here on Chicago Jazz Revealed 90.9 FM.